Well, with sexual scandals in the daily headlines and even in the church, the infiltration of pornography into our daily lives, extramarital affairs, the popularity of sexting, girls getting involved in prostitution as young as 14 through things like human trafficking that's happening all around us, the Me Too movement and its ever-growing popularity. Here's the thing. Unwanted sexual behavior is at a crisis level. Here's the question. What's driving it all? Why does someone continue in a cycle of destructive behavior like that? And is there any hope for healing? Well, we're going to talk about it today with Jay Stringer. He's an author, a therapist, an ordained minister, and he's found what works and what doesn't to help a person out of the shame of sexual brokenness and into hope. Stringer, over the years, has surveyed nearly 3,800 women and men who sought out guidance in the midst of their sexual brokenness. He shares the surprising results in the book we're going to talk about today. It's called Unwanted, How Sexual Brokenness Reveals Our Way to Healing. And by the way, it's from Nav Press, and it's new this month, just released this month, and he joins us here on NBL. Jay, great to have you with us. Thank you for taking the time to talk about Unwanted.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today. Honored to be here.
I don't often make a disclaimer like this at the beginning of a conversation, but I'm going to, because I've spent quite a bit of time looking at the book today.
Okay.
Everyone just needs to get a copy and read it before this conversation, which is going to put a lot of pressure on them to get to the store or, you know, go to Amazon and order it and read it before we even start talking here. But the reason I say that, and of course I'm being facetious, but the point is there's way more in this book than we can ever talk about in a one-hour conversation. But we'll do our best and appreciate you taking the time to be here. But give us a little bit of your own background. I kind of read a little intro there about who you are and what you do, but I'm getting the impression, having looked at the book today, that just say no doesn't work. For people experiencing sexual brokenness, porn addiction, whatever it might be, unwanted affairs, paying for sex, whatever's going on, just saying no and trying harder isn't working, and you've discovered that. So give us the situation from your perspective.
Sure. So well said. So as a mental health therapist, men and women were arriving in my office with little to no understanding of what freedom from sexual shame or brokenness actually involved. If you kind of grew up in the 1980s, you may have been around just some of the purity movements that may have encouraged people to, I don't know, put $5 in a jar if they masturbated or if they looked at porn. Mm-hmm. And a lot of just, you know, paradigms about bouncing your eyes, trying to look the other way, a three-second rule. And yet, as one of my clients put so well, he said, Jay, when I've been having the same conversation with my accountability partner for 15 years, something is not working. Mm-hmm. And so whether it was people coming out of a Christian paradigm or I would say even more of a liberal paradigm where there's a huge desire to remove a lot of shame and stigma, but then they fail to invite people into meaning. And so part of what I was trying to do in Unwanted was, what does it mean to kind of change the conversation and invite people right into the middle of their sexual brokenness instead of just trying to remove the stigma associated with it or trying to suppress desire in general?
All right. I have no idea where I read this. I know it was in your book, chapter or what context, but I remember reading about the guy who's the cameraman for Shark Week.
Yeah.
Okay. And somebody asked him, like, how do you not get eaten by the shark?
Great story.
Right? And if I understand the story, he goes, I swim right at it with my camera. Now, maybe you can explain why he would do that and how it fits into the context of this conversation.
I love that we're starting right there. Such a good story. So, yes, the cameraman, his name is Andy Casagrande, and the videographer for the show Shark Week. And he was interviewed a couple years ago, and they just said, Andy, what in the world do you do when there's a great white shark swimming at you? And he said, you have to do something counterintuitive. You take the camera, and then you swim right at the shark. And what ends up happening is the shark kind of comes up and bonks its nose against the lens and then realizes that it's not food. And so if you're a great white shark, you're used to everything in the entire ocean swimming away from you. And so Andy goes on to say that if you don't act like prey, they will not treat you like prey. And to me, that has so much to do with just the role of facing our shame. So much of the power of sexual shame in our lives is really our flight from it. But the more that we can turn towards it and invite other people into where we harbor it, the more that we will experience healing. And what I love about that story is even when you look at just the story in the Old Testament where Moses is instructed to basically put this, the backstory is that the people of Israel are grumbling, they're complaining, they don't like their rations of food, they don't like their manna, and then they begin to complain. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is these poisonous snakes come up and end up eating a lot of the people of Israel. And so there's all these bodies, corpses piling up, and what Moses is instructed to do is to basically put this bronze serpent on a flagpole and lift it up. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is when the people look at this bronze flagpole, that's when they're saved. And so the Gospel of John picks up on this as well and says, just as Moses lifted up the rod in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up in order for people to be saved. And that's essentially a lot of the take that I'm trying to take in this book is what does it mean for us to actually look at the very thing that's causing us shame? Because so often we've tried to suppress it, we've tried to bounce our eyes, we've tried to get into accountability, but we've never actually really faced the specifics of the things that we find arousing, the specifics of what we lust for. And I would say right in the middle of our sexual brokenness actually provides clues into the way of healing.
So you're saying, and I definitely saw this in the book, but I don't even know how to put it into words, that by looking clearly at what it is we're lusting after and the kind of behaviors we're engaged in, we can gain clues as to what's driving that activity in the first place.
So well said. Yes.
Okay.
So, and this is backed up by, so as you said in the intro, I surveyed about 3,800 men and women. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I did that is most of the contemporary research that we have basically tells us what we already know, that pornography, infidelity, buying sex are massive issues in our world today. So we know that 57% of pastors, 64% of youth pastors report struggling or have struggled with it. We know that pornography sites receive more monthly traffic than Netflix, Amazon, Twitter combined. We know, you know, about 30% of people now report infidelity within a marriage. So again, we have a lot of data, but what we don't have a lot of data on is what is the story that is actually driving this? And so one of the things that I love, again, about the Old Testament, especially in the book of Genesis, is that whenever God is approaching people, especially with Adam, the approach to Adam is not, Adam, you're hiding, stop hiding. God's question is, where are you? And then to Jacob, it's, what is your name? And then to Hagar, who's just been immensely traumatized by the first family of the faith, mm-hmm. the angel of the Lord appears to her basically in the wilderness and says, where do you come from and where are you going? And so that is really the approach that I wanted to take with sexual brokenness, is to really invite people into a question of, tell me about your childhood. Tell me about your relationship with your parents, some of the formative experiences that you went through throughout adolescence. And then tell me a little bit about what you are experiencing now. Did you feel like your needs weren't met? Did you feel like you had a lack of purpose in life? And then I asked them to tell me some of the specifics of the categories that they search for on the internet. And what I can say is that after you pull about 3,800 people, inevitable patterns begin to emerge.
So for the guy who's still having the same conversation with his accountability partner 12 years mm-hmm. later, you're saying swimming towards the shark, taking this thing on head on, is effective. So let me just ask this question.
Yes.
People are getting help. They're experiencing hope and healing. Some walking away from former behaviors because of this process?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, so let me tell you a story. So yeah. One of, with regard to that guy that you mentioned, one of the classic scenarios that I hear almost weekly in my office is about a story about a guy that's having a difficult day at work. or maybe he makes a bid for intimacy with his spouse and it's rejected. What often ends up happening for this man, especially if he's in my office, is that what will ensue is maybe the next hour, maybe the next day, he's going to start using pornography. And so when he comes into my office or he talks to an accountability partner, what he'll say is, I felt pretty lonely or I felt a lot of lust and I just need to stop my lust. But the thing is both of his descriptions actually don't really address the main issue at play here. And so one of the things that we don't have language to name, especially in Christian circles, is the way that our sexuality often gets eroticized through our anger and through our power. And so when I was talking to this guy, essentially what we conversed about was that he was really, really angry at his boss that day. He was really, really angry that his wife turned down his bid for connection. And it was in a lot of that anger that drove him to pornography. And so if we only have language to name lust and we're not actually addressing the ways that men will often want to subordinate women in their fantasy life in the midst of some of the difficulties that they're facing, we're not going to be able to transform that dimension of male sexuality because we have no language to name that it even exists.
And is that true going in the other direction, women to men?
With regard to anger?
Well, not so much the anger issue, but I mean, obviously, there are women who struggle with porn addiction or inappropriate sexual
Absolutely.
Behaviors as well. Are there strategies to help women deal with the same thing?
Yes. So one of the things that we found about women who pursued anonymous affairs was that they were 5 times more likely to report unmet needs. And so these women felt like the needs that they have were not as important as another person's. They felt like they needed to be secretive in order to get those needs met. And so again, in a lot of the kind of classic gender stereotypes that we see is that women are often asked to be fairly sacrificial, to be kind of servant-hearted. And so what ends up happening is that there's a shadow side to that that plays out in sexuality, where in order to kind of pursue being known, being loved, they will often pursue some form of sexual brokenness. The other thing that was also true was that if men, this was true of men and women, but we definitely see it a lot with women, is that some of the most significant pornography users, so I use the Likert scale of basically 0 to 5, 5 being the greatest extent.
Mm-hmm.
The most significant pornography users in my research had sexual abuse scores from childhood that were nearly 24% higher than those that did not view pornography at all.
Say that again. So that means there was some sexual abuse in their past?
Yes.
Okay.
And so that's I mean, especially as a clinician, as a pastor, this is so much of my heart for this work, is that in an era, as you've named at the beginning of the show, we're in the midst of a lot of sexual madness. And what ends up happening a lot is that things like sex addiction, things like pornography often get all the attention, and they do need to be addressed. But if we don't have eyes to see a lot of the dynamics that are driving this to begin with, we're really not going to be able to invite people to transformation. So with regard to sexual abuse, I know when I say that phrase, a lot of men especially will check out, but I think part of what I would want to say is that that can be on a spectrum. There's some people that have experienced repeated and horrific abuse and are haunted by those memories regularly, but there's also those who would maybe never consider what they went through as a form of sexual abuse. They may have been introduced to pornography by maybe a peer or someone a little older than them, or maybe had something that they might refer to as strange or odd.
Mm-hmm.
But the most significant thing to recognize is that a lot of the first sexual experiences that we undergo, pornography or not, actually shape our sexual template. And so the important thing to remember about abuse is that when the grooming process first begins, it doesn't start with genital contact or sex. It begins with basically a bonding process where they might say, hey, Jay, you have a really nice arm, or, you know, that's a really nice dress. So what they're trying to do is to initially create a sense of safety with you. And so what your body experiences is this sense of bonding, of I can trust this person. But then as the abuse continues, what might end up happening is that you're feeling some level of arousal at what's happening. They might introduce you to porn or to a body part that you've never seen before. And again, part of the way that we're wired is to notice, to pay attention to things that are odd to us or things that we've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we begin to feel oxytocin, then we begin to feel some sense of arousal. But then they might say, don't tell anybody that you saw this, or don't tell anybody about our little secret arrangement. And then in the midst of that, our bodies begin to feel a lot of shame. They might begin to feel numb. And so what ends up happening at a very pivotal age is this kind of very toxic sexual cocktail. And so later in life, these men and women don't feel sexually alive unless they're recreating some of those original dynamics from childhood. So they intentionally seek out, or unconsciously or intentionally seek out, you know, sexual behaviors that give them that sense of I'm going to bond with someone or mm-hmm. something, but then I'm also going to feel aroused there, but then I'm going to feel cortisol and stress and shame. And so that's, you know, so much of the work of what I invite men and women to is, like, if you're finding yourself kind of compulsively drawn to something for years, part of what we really have to address is, where did that sexual arousal template first get established? And a lot of times what we'll find is it was in the midst of being exposed to pornography for the first time or sexual abuse.
I've seen a lot of books on this kind of topic. As a matter of fact, I've interviewed Dr. Dan Allender in the past and Dr. Mark Lazar and others that, you know, have even done endorsements here. But all of them are saying this is the book you really need to read. And so they're all authors themselves, and they're not competing with you on that issue. There's something groundbreaking about it because it's so counterintuitive. It's the word you used earlier, you know, in describing somebody swimming at a shark so they don't get eaten, which doesn't make any sense.
No.
But there's a number of things I want to touch on just so people know where we're going with this. While this deals with sexual brokenness, some of the same things I think you're saying in here are true with regard to other behaviors or other addictions, right? Because it's all coming from a place of shame, and maybe you can even define what shame is in that sense. Because somebody goes, well, you know, if you look at pornography, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. But that's not how the word, I don't think, is used in this context. What does it mean to live in shame, and how can it affect a variety of behaviors, including sexual brokenness?
Sure. So, I mean, where I should kind of back up and just say, there's a neuropsychologist by the name of Dr. Alan Shore who talks about shame in terms of a car. And so we have what's called a parasympathetic nervous system and a sympathetic nervous system. And without getting too complicated, he uses this wonderful analogy about like a manual transmission car, that as children, we are made to accelerate. We are made to go forward into the world. But we also need to be able to have a break. Like if we're about to run into a street, if we're about to eat something poisonous, we need to be able to say, stop.
Mm-hmm.
But what Alan Shore would say is that when there is a lack of attunement, a lack of kind of caring clutch being applied to that break, part of what we begin to experience is the shearing off of the experience of shame. So what ends up happening is that we begin to feel like we've done something wrong, and then eventually we begin to feel like we are a bad person at our core, that there's something deeply flawed about who we are. So whereas kind of guilt in a lot of the contemporary definition is that you feel ashamed of something that you did, shame is much more the experience of I am bad, I am unwanted. And so what ends up happening is that when we undergo these experiences of shame, what we will often seek out, and again, this will be counterintuitive,
mm-hmm.
As you named well, most people think that we feel shame in response to kind of poor decisions that we make. But shame, when we're feeling shame, that can also drive us to behaviors, not for the purpose of escape, but actually for the purpose of judgment. And so, again, if I'm feeling really unwanted, I feel like I've just made a lot of mistakes in my life, I feel like I don't really like where my life is going, I am much more likely to pursue some type of behavior, overeating, pornography, an affair, buying sex, to actually confirm that that's who I am. And so in a lot of ways, what we tend to talk about with addictions is that they're an escape. And I have no argument that they are a form of escape. But until we really recognize that some of our most problematic behaviors are not just for escape, but really for that purpose of judgment, that who am I? Well, I'm a man that looks at porn. Who am I? I'm a man that is 80, 90 pounds overweight. And so when you begin to kind of pursue those behaviors, not just for a sense of pleasure, but far more for a sense of I am really unwanted and deeply ill.
So that confirms that they're self-destructive behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because they can't do anything good for you except, first of all, reaffirm your own belief about yourself. But later, I mean, if you're, 100 pounds overweight, your life is in danger. You're morbidly obese. So, I mean, and the other thing, pursuing affairs, paying for sex, that kind of stuff, those are very dangerous and risky behaviors because of sexually transmitted diseases, crime that might be involved. You could lose your job. You could lose your family, but you're saying people, in order to sort of reinforce the deep-seated beliefs they have about themselves, that they're flawed and broken, they pursue these things because it confirms those realities to them.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah, that's why we do it.
Wow. So, okay, going back to it, but you have seen people confront these issues, learn who they really are, and begin to address these things head on, and they're finding hope and freedom.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Give us a few more examples. I mean, quick stories, but help us understand, like, who comes to see you? Who's the typical person? What are they dealing with, and how do they find freedom?
Okay. So one of the types of people that I work with is a man struggling with pornography. I'll just stay with the example that I used earlier in the show, where this man is dealing with a lot of lack of purpose at work. His boss is constantly on him. He might be in a marriage, but he also might be single. And part of what he ends up doing is using pornography, let's say, at 11 p.m. And so part of my job as a therapist is to kind of invite him to see, well, what are the patterns that we're seeing here? So you have a lack of purpose. You're kind of around a very strict authority figure, and you begin to pursue pornography late in the evening. And so one of the examples, kind of analogies that I use with male and female clients is to think of their sexual life almost like a house. And you all know those kind of moments where it's late in the evening and then the familiar knock of lust comes to your door.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to do? Some people will phone a friend for backup. Some people will try and shoot the intruder. And, if you've ever struggled with this, we know the experience of opening up the door and just letting it ransack our house. And so what I invite my clients to is really this notion of what does it mean to listen to your lust? And so to, instead of just trying to combat it, to actually go out onto the front porch, to meet the lust there and to say, why have you come here? What is it about my house or my life that makes you feel like you would even be welcome here? And so one of the things that my research looked at was one of the predominant sexual fantasies for men on the internet had to do with seeking out women that were kind of college age or teenagers. They had a smaller body type, oftentimes a race that suggested to these men some level of subservience. And so what we did in the analytics was to say, what are the primary associations tied in to this fantasy? So what are the predictors of this type of fantasy about having power over women? And what ended up happening was that three things became true. This type of man had a strict father. He had a significant lack of purpose in his life. And he had very high levels of shame. And so to me, as a therapist and a pastor, the writing on the wall was that men found power over women arousing precisely because it gave them an arena of life to find dominance amidst a lot of the difficulties that they were facing. And so that's so much of the work of healing, is to be able to say, especially for this type of man, if you've been powered over by a very authoritarian father or a lot of strict rules and regulations, you're dealing with a lot of kind of difficulty in life, that's really the backdrop of why pornography becomes so appealing, is because you can have exactly what you want when you want it. And there's nothing else on the planet like that. And so, again, if we're only trying to address it from a moral issue, or if we're only trying to address it from just a stop it issue, we're not actually going to invite men to acknowledge some of the pain from their childhood, some of the difficulties that they're facing in life, and the ways that those things become sexualized.
We had a guy on the show the other day, called in for a different reason, but made a comment about pornography, and he said, hey, look it, guys, if you're struggling with porn addiction, stop saying to the Lord, I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it. Lord, you know, in my heart, this isn't really what I desire. Help, you know, help me deal with this, because this isn't what I want to do. He goes, tell him the truth. Say, hey, Lord, I really enjoy looking at porn, and specifically this type of porn, and I need help because I seem to enjoy it more than, you know, healthier ways of dealing with my life. And like being, is there any place for that kind of honesty in this process?
Oh my goodness, that's so refreshing. Absolutely. The truth will set us free. And so if we are only trying to deny that I don't want to do this, that's not the truth. And so that's the second section of my book, is really this question of why do I stay? Mm-hmm. So almost everyone will claim that they want to get out. Like, this type of sexual behavior is an unwanted dimension of their life. But until you recognize how your addiction or your compulsive behavior serves you, you're not actually going to be able to get out. So if you don't know how to regulate and confront yourself in the midst of marital difficulties, you're not going to be able to say goodbye to pornography. If you can't work through some of the reenactment piece of what's been played out with sexual abuse in your life, mm-hmm. you're going to continue to play out some of those reenactments later in life with other partners. And so to me, that's the pivot that I really want to take, is how do we allow sexual brokenness to be the very stage through which the work of redemption plays out in our life? That our sexuality is not something that we need to be ashamed of or that we need to hide, but it's actually one of the most significant places where we will be spiritually formed.
All right, real quick before we go to the phones.
Yes.
First of all, this is the time that I really feel torn, because I have a million more questions, but I don't want to neglect any of the phone calls, so we'll get to some of those. Feel free to include content from your book as it applies to any of the questions or comments.
Okay.
Also, today, like other times when we've had sensitive topics, we've had a lot of hang-up phone calls. So somebody calls in, chickens out, and hangs up.
Okay.
So I don't know where we're going here, but let's give it a shot, and we'll start with...
One thing that I would say, Neil, is just one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book and address this was to really equip the church, small groups, accountabilities in a way that they have not been equipped before. I don't believe that we've been given the right language or resources. And so that's part of the reason why.
Amen.
I also have an online course that's called heartofmanjourney.com, heartofmanjourney.com. And that's what we go through, the three parts of my book that really explore how does our story impact the sexual choices we make. And that's available for small groups, individuals. And again, you don't have to suffer with this without meaning, because right in the middle of our sexual brokenness is actually the stage through which our life is given back to us by God.
Amen. All right, so heartofmanjourney.com. Okay. Pam, up in Toronto. Let's get there. John, you're next. Joe, after that. Hello, Pam. Welcome to NBL.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
What's up?
I could really relate what you were saying about sexual abuse and feeling like you trust a person and then being introduced to sexual things. I had several incidences when I was 5 and 6. I don't know how long that went on. I don't remember who it was. And then I had several babysitters' sons take advantage of me as well, and I didn't actually acknowledge it or really remember it until my early 20s. Now I'm in my 40s, and I'm left dealing with this, And the unfortunate thing is I tend to engage in a self-harm that's sexually oriented, and it really, you know, what you said about, oh, I'm not going to do this again, or I really hate doing this, Lord, I don't want to do this, which is obvious, but I've tried to ask the Lord, like, what is that, the base of this? Why does this make me feel better? Why do I feel driven to do this? Why can't I stop myself from doing it? Mm-hmm. And that's really disturbing to me, and it breaks my heart.
Mm. Wow. All right. Jay, you've likely heard similar things talking to 3,800 people, and now 3,801. Pam, thanks for calling. Don't go away. Jay, your thoughts for Pam?
Yeah, thank you, Pam, for your vulnerability. And I mean, I think part of what I would say is that just as you named, just the heartbreak of what you're in right now, and you also describe sexual abuse and trauma from childhood. And again, I don't know your history of healing within that story, but I mean, to be able to even see a picture of yourself at 5 or 6 years old, and to get a sense of how much life was in you, and the way that that abuse really began to both kind of bring some sense of arousal, but also a sense of shame, that's often why we reenact that type of sexual violence against ourselves or some type of self-harm behavior, is that in the midst of all that we're going through, we don't have language to make sense of all that we're experiencing. And so when we don't have language and we don't have good attunement and we don't have a good therapist, good parents to be able to talk through and work through that stuff, we begin to feel a lot of shame about what our bodies experienced, what they felt. And then later in life, we go and pursue self-harm to reinforce those feelings that we're a deeply flawed person. But so much of what I would invite you to hold is just the heartache of your behavior right now, with kind of just that vision of a 5-6-year-old who's likely so full of life and desire. And it's really in the midst of holding both of those together that we can begin to kind of bring kindness to our bodies. And so this is the language of Romans 2:4. Of it is the kindness of God that leads to change, not accusation, not contempt, but really when we're able to hold our present story and the past story with a sense of kindness and know that the Father who waits for us is eagerly awaiting to bring kindness to those portions of our life.
Hopefully. Romans 2:4?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And Pam, I see you're in the Toronto area. Whether it's Cornerstone Bookshop or whether you use Amazon or whatever, I strongly encourage you to get this book called Unwanted. And you might think I say that about every book, and I usually do encourage people to get a copy of the book. I'm just telling you, this one is equivalent to an oxygen mask on an airplane that just lost cabin pressure. Like, you really need to think about getting a copy of this book, because as I was looking at it and thinking about some of the things I've been through in my own life, I was thinking, good Lord, this book is ordained by God and born out of the heart of God, I believe. And, and you know, Jay, thank you for listening to the Holy Spirit and putting it together the way that you have. But, Pam, I think it's going to be a huge help to you, all right?
Yeah. And part of what I would just kind of want to highlight within what Pam mentioned was that ability to hold my present brokenness, but also be able to speak about the trauma and the abuse and the experiences that we went through, and to be able to allow our heart to break. That is one of the most beautiful examples of what it means to do this work, that we're not just only seeing our sexual brokenness, our self-harm, because, again, so much of what happens just in our life story is we hate ourselves for what we do, the poor food choices, the poor self-harm, the poor sexual choices that we're making, and what happens is that eclipses so much of the other stories that are driving this. And so just thank you, Pam, for modeling what it means to hold a heart of compassion, and then to also invite people to know their story as well.
Thank you, Pam. God bless you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, John from Hamilton, Ontario. Let's go up north again. How you doing, John? Good to have you with us. You had a question or comment for Jay?
Yeah, I got a couple questions. First of all, thanks for what you're doing and just addressing this issue, which I believe is a huge and just amazing. So I was exposed to, to porn probably at about 8 or 9, and I didn't really understand it. Later on as a teenager, I really struggled with it, and even into my young adult years. But I found myself in a deep depression, and I still struggle with porn. But I'm wondering, what happens? What happened to me mentally or psychologically, or just that being exposed to porn, and unknowingly, I would never thought. Being exposed, at a young age, psychologically and even physiologically, is it what it's doing to my brain, or did it have like effects that could have led to, depression or chemically, something like that? Because the only thing I can really attribute, really looking back to how I ended up with this depression and ultimately almost taking my own life. Was this being exposed to porn and that being a big part of my life and eventually kind of becoming a larger part of my life, and there was some there was shame, and I did want to get away from it, but even like chemically and even like now, like is there a reasoning, like physiologically, chemically, like what happened?
Okay. Jay, sure. You address that in the book. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the first resource would be from, there's a guy named Dr. Gary Wilson who wrote a book on Your Brain on Porn. And then there's an organization called Fight the New Drug that also has just a lot of great resources out there to address what's happening within the brain and the harm that that does. So two excellent resources there. Part of what my research looked at was how a lack of purpose drives men to pornography. And this was only true of men, was that a man who was struggling with a sense of depression, not knowing who they are, looking back at their life and seeing a lot of failures, they escalated their pornography use by a factor of 7. And so that's kind of the chicken or the egg question of, does a lack of purpose drive pornography, or does pornography drive a lack of purpose? And I think we have to say it's both. And that's because of what happens in the neuropathways with our brain and tolerance. But that's so much of the invitation for us to kind of look at what's the role that pornography has often played. And so one of my clients, who I would say was in a very similar position to what John just named, started talking about just a lot of the neglect that he experienced in his family of origin, and had parents that were either pretty harsh or very disengaged from him, depending on the time. And part of what he began to be involved in was pornography, different shows on different cable stations. And so for him, this was part of the way that he would take a lot of his anxiety, a lot of his depression, was into the arms of pornography. And so for him, part of the healing journey didn't just mean having contempt for himself, but part of what he told me was, Jay, I would never say that I was grateful for pornography, but it did show me in some ways how little I knew how to regulate myself, and it was something that I went to pretty often in the midst of a lot of the heartache that I was experiencing. And so that's really that kind of counterintuitive invitation to say, there's been something about pornography that, as John 10:10 says, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And at the same time, part of what people begin to lean on is pornography in the midst of a lot of the heartache in their life. And so the more that we can get mental health treatment for depression, meet with a provider, but really begin to turn to face what are the issues, what was the family context that was in the background of this depression, that's really when we're able to turn towards kindness for ourselves and pursue a different story for our future.
Yeah, and there's a boatload of hope available, John, for you or anyone else that's struggling with this. which is why I strongly encourage you to get the book, because I can't even, I kid you not, this is like, this conversation is the appetizer of what's available. The main course and the dessert are even better. There's just so much more, but John, it's gonna really help you move in the right direction. And I wish we had more time, but hopefully that's an encouraging start, at least to know that you're on the right track by even raising these kind of questions. So,
yes.
Yeah. Thank
for
you,
sure.
John. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot.
I'm looking at the time here. I want to get to Joe real quick and then an anonymous caller. Joe, how are you? Good to have you with us on NBL.
Oh, good, sir. The show really resonated with me, especially the brokenness part. I wonder if Jay ever heard of Jean Vanier's teaching?
I have heard of Vanier's teaching, yes.
Because he emphasizes that factor, too, the brokenness, that we have to come to God with our neediness and mm-hmm. without pride and be real, you know?
Yes.
I think that's
yes.
part and parcel of what you're saying, and it really hits home, and I think it's totally of God, you know, the yeah. direction that you're Man. Taking the people in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and respond to Jay if you want.
Yeah, when we, I mean, that's in the New Testament, there's often two words for the body, soma and sarx. And so the language that John uses is that, the Gospel of John uses is that Jesus actually became sarx. And so this is the type of flesh that can be made killable, that's vulnerable to disease. And so that's at the heart of our gospel, is this God that incarnates himself into the very disease, into the very addictions, into the very heartache of humanity, and takes up residence there. And that is just an astounding feature of this gospel that we say we believe in, is that we have a God who's not ashamed or offended by who we are, but actually approaches us with his body, his blood, and wants to serve us in the midst of the brokenness that we experience. And to me, that is absolutely wild.
Incredible. Joe, thanks for the phone call. And again, get a copy of Unwanted if you can. It's from NAV Press. I want to get to our final caller because I'm looking at the clock and realizing we're up against a deadline here. We're just going to go with the name caller in quotations. We have a caller. How are you? You're on with Jay. Go ahead.
Hi there. It's just so just amazing to hear all of this information I've never heard of before. It's so refreshing. So thank you.
Amen.
I'm really
thank
excited
you,
to the book. Yeah, so I was basically molested or abused from age 2 till about 12 or 13 to where the point where I was like, if you don't stop doing this, like, I'm going to get pregnant now kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, it was by somebody who was my age. So I believe now, knowing what I know, being a social worker, that he was probably getting abused, but we don't talk about it. Nobody knows in the family, because I know it would really devastate the family. So that being said, when I got saved, I went to a healing conference where 2 days of like learning everything, and then had some carpet time with the Lord at the end there, some worship. And then the lady did all of the training for obvious reasons. And then the man came on without me expecting, had my eyes closed, her husband, and said, on behalf of your dad, your uncle, or whoever it is that abused you, I just, because I realize that you're probably never going to hear this, I'm sorry. And I needed that so much. Like, I just, like, sobbed hysterically, and I hang on to that to this day, like, because I'm never going to get, as far as I know, like, I've let go of the hope of getting the I'm sorry from the abuser. So I just want to encourage you, if ever you've never heard of that before, maybe you already do this, I don't know, but I'm fully recovered. I'm completely healed. I still have this person in my life very close to me, and I actually love this person. And I just also want to give hope to people out there that are so broken, because I do see brokenness so much in people in my field, and it's possible. Like, Jesus can fully, completely heal you. And also with regards to the topic, which is pornography. So I was exposed through through a parent and through an older friend of mine, like the older sibling, And I find now, like, my husband and I finally have realized, and finally it's out, but he would put on pornography for me because he thought that I liked it and he wanted me to enjoy the experience more or whatnot. And then once we finally started talking about it, we realized that it's not really the pornography that sort of, I don't know how to keep this family friendly, but satisfies me, I guess. It was the thing, it was doing something bad. It was like the doing something naughty or bad that I'm not supposed to do that would really satisfy me. And there's something that you said today where it's like it's that child or that, you know, something inside
template.
Of you.
Yeah, the template.
Yeah,
okay.
So it was like when you're talking now, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this actually exists. Like, yeah. It's actually something.
Right.
So I'm still struggling with that. So if you could give a little bit more advice on, like, how to move past sexually. So I'm with my husband. And I'm trying to do things in my mind now to make it better or whatever by thinking things that I shouldn't be thinking.
All right. So there's a lot there. Jay?
How much time do I have, Neil?
Actually, we've got plenty of time. I'm worried about the deadline for your sake, actually.
I am good for this call, for this answer.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, a couple things. I think first thing is just even what we see in 2 Samuel 13, that this is the rape of Tamar by someone in her family, her stepbrother. And these things happen in family systems. 80 to 90% of people who are abused, introduced to pornography, these are systems that are well known. And then these systems go and try and cover up what's happened through sometimes good intentions, also poor theology. And so part of what we need to kind of begin to name and to study is really what's the context of our family system, whether that was rigid, disengaged, or chose to be intentionally blind to what was happening, because that's all part of the healing process. And that's not about blame, but it's really about studying the conditions that allowed for a lot of the abuse and heartache to emerge to begin with. And that's really so much of what needs to be addressed. And as the caller put so beautifully, what she realized in the course of her marriage was that she began to have certain sexual fantasies that she was intrigued by, maybe even troubled by. And marriage is so often the place where all of this comes to pass. And so that in and of itself doesn't mean that your marriage is broken. All it means is that it's evidence of a marriage. And that's part of God's design for marriage, is to bring all of this stuff up to the surface and to allow a sense of curiosity and kindness for what's emerging. And so as she put so well, if a lot of her original experiences had to do with kind of being naughty or doing something that was secretive, that's really the kind of invitation, I would say, from God, is to go back to some of those places where her sexuality that had a sense of innocence and passion and desire began to be misused by that abuser and created a template that was about doing something naughty and secretive. And so the more that we're able to kind of hold the sexuality that I currently have is not honorable, maybe it's not as free as I want it to be, but then I'm going to go back to some of these places where my sexuality was formed, that's where we can really create a sense of healing and hope for our story to change.
Wow. So well said. And caller, whatever your name officially is, thank you for calling and for being
a part
of the conversation.
Yes.
Jay, I guess you know at this point I'm going to invite you back sometime if you're able to do it.
I would love that, Neil. I've so enjoyed just your openness and just your ability to address an issue with a lot of hope, but also with a lot of honesty. You're a very rare man, Neil.
Wow, and you're a rare guest. I was telling Zach earlier, good Lord, where was Jay, you know, so many years ago? But thank you for all you've done to compile this in one place, a great resource in a book called Unwanted. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Cornerstone Bookshop, in the place you mentioned in York, PA, I guess. But also, what was the other website?
It's heartofmanjourney.com, and this is a 18-episode series that we really created. There's a film that some of your listeners may have heard of, The Heart of Man, available on Netflix right now. we worked together to create a curriculum for churches, small groups, and individuals that really are going to equip people to address this. So you get into just basically a theology, a paradigm of what sexual wholeness and goodness is all about, and then we'll journey into some of the formative experiences, our family systems, abuse, trauma, and then some of the things that keep us in our compulsive behavior, unwanted sexual behavior, and then we'll set a paradigm for how do you actually get out of this. So I am super, super excited. It launches next month, but people can pre-order now at a discount. And heartofmanjourney.com.
Wow, it's so huge. All right, we'll talk again. I'll have Zach try to set up another interview at some point in the not-too-distant future. And congratulations on the book coming out, but I just know that this is going to be used by God to provide an awful lot of direction and hope and healing for people that are struggling. So, Jay, thank you for being with us and
Neil,
for hanging
thank
on.
You.
All right, God bless. We'll be in touch. Jay
thank
Stringer
you.
Is a licensed mental health professional and counselor. He's also an ordained minister. And, wow, has interviewed 3,800 people on this very issue and counseled them and worked with them. Unwanted, the name of the book, it's from NAV Press.